Gorgeous Food and Drink on Radio Gorgeous. This week is a special food week, and we're interviewing aspiring women who work with food. And today we're talking to Ruth Rogers, MBE, founder of A River Cafe, mentor to a load of famous chefs, including Jamie Oliver, Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, and Sam and Sam from Morrow. She's a champion of all Italian food, author of countless cookbooks, including the River Cafe cookbook, and inventor of the cult flourless cake, Chocolate Nemesis. Hi, Ruthie. A massive, greedy welcome to Radio Gorgeous. And
welcome to you. You can hear the noise of the everybody in the River Cafe eating and drinking and having a nice time. And it's only lunch, yeah.
So let's go back to 1987.
Yes.
And apparently this was a canteen for work.
Not really. That's become a kind of urban myth. Really what happened was that my husband, Richard Rogers, started his architectural practice here. They bought these warehouses. And I was working with them, and we always wanted to have somewhere to eat. And so, you know, there were other architects in these warehouses. There were designers. There were graphic designers. There was model makers. There were picture framers. And so we thought for everybody in the community, there should be a place to eat. And so Rose and I, you know, decided we were friends. And I said, come and have a look at this, you know, because we thought it was a pretty great place. And I said, maybe we should, do you know anybody who could do a restaurant? And then we said, we'll do it. And so Rose had done some chefing in New York. I hadn't done any, but I was always a very passionate cook. And so we saw it, and then we opened it up. And the reason that I think people thought it was a staff canteen was because for the first 6 months, we weren't allowed to open to the public. But then as soon as we
did... like licensing?
Yeah, it was to do with the planning permission. But then they realized that people don't come out of here drunk or singing or whatever, that it was pretty easy. So
when you started, was the idea of an Italian restaurant, or did that evolve?
No. From the very beginning, Rose and I knew that we wanted to cook Italian food because she had lived and cooked in Italy for about 5 years. She had just come back. And my husband's family are Italian, and I really learned how to cook from them. So both of us knew that that's what we wanted to cook.
Now, when you first came, before the River Cafe opened, Italian food in London was completely different than this.
Yeah.
It was lasagna, you know, it was kind of one-pot dish. It was things like chicken wrapped in spinach and mozzarella. You remember all those kind of...
Yeah.
It was really kind of old-fashioned, kind of adapted for English palates.
Yeah, I think that it's the same thing in the United States, that what happened was Rose and I, both having lived in Italy, we thought, why can't we get the kind of food that Italians eat and the kind of way they cook? Why can't we have that in London? Because in America, where I grew up, I know that it was very influenced by Southern Italian food that they thought was Southern Italian food. But then you go to Italy and you have Southern Italian food, you don't get meatballs with, you know, Parmesan cheese. You don't get eggplant cooked. I mean, there is eggplant Parmigiani, but it's light. It's not smothered in sauce. When you have a piece of fish, it's a grilled piece of fish with green herbs, wonderful olive oil. So we thought, you know, what is this disconnect that when you eat Italian food here, it's heavy and rich and groaning, and then when you go to Italy, it is so fresh and so delicate and beautiful.
Were you one of the first people to kind of import Italian food to England in the way that you were importing it because you wanted to use it?
Yeah, I think, I want to be a bit more humble than that, because I think that many people were changing the way we eat in the late 80s. So that's for other people to say.
This was the mid-80s. Some dried tomatoes had only just come out.
Yeah, no, it's true. And so in 1987.
Yeah.
But I think also the other thing we did about restaurants was not just the food, but we wanted to have, you know, I always say in the old days it was neither wanted to eat really well, so you had to get dressed up and you had to be intimidated about the wine, intimidated by the chef. I once had a chef in Paris, you know, almost bring a knife to the table because we were half an hour late. And, you know, you had an amazing meal. Or you decided to eat, you know, in a kind of fun, noisy place, but you ate badly. And so we thought, why can't you have the drama of a beautiful room and fun and, you know, glamorous and, you know, and also where you didn't have to have, wear a tie or whatever, but also have amazing food.
So you invented kind of casual upmarket dining then,
in a
way.
I did. Yeah. I think Rose and I did. I think that Rowley Lee did at Kensington Place. I think Sally Clark did. I think Alice Walters did in New York.
So you're all kind of doing it at the
same
time.
Everybody was thinking, we're fed up with the scary chef. It's very old-fashioned.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com.
So were you one of the first people to have a kitchen that you can see?
Open kitchen, yeah. Rose and I wanted to have an open kitchen. The kind of, because both of us, you know, had houses, whatever, that where the kitchen was in the main space, where it was accessible, where you could see the chef cooking, and the chefs could see the people eating, and, you know, we could see somebody being served. We could see if there's a problem. Somebody could come up to us and say, I really like the way you made those artichokes. You know, how did you do it? Well, you know, and the waiters could also understand the kitchen and as the customers.
So tell us about getting a Michelin star. Did that kind of intimidate you?
Well, no, it didn't intimidate us. It made us very happy. I think Rose and I, probably of all the chefs, and everyone here, we're in one hand not overwhelmed by it, because for us what we did every day was what we did. You know, we never were in that kind of circle of professional chefs. You know, we were what we did, although we considered ourselves obviously professional chefs. It meant a lot to the younger chefs. And then I think we felt very proud, because it kind of, for years, you know, nobody could understand why two women, you know, we're in Hammersmith. They hadn't been trained, and the kitchens were doing what they did, and this was very nice.
Your cookbooks are so influential. Did you have any idea how hungry we were for Italian food?
No, I think that when we first published the River Cafe cookbook, the blue one, I think the print run was something like 3,500 copies, and, you know, it's now sold a million, I think, almost a million. And I think that we thought, well, who's going to buy this book? You know, maybe the people who eat in the River Cafe, and that wasn't very many. And then, you know, we were very, you know, our publisher supported us. We did not want to have a picture of food or ourselves on the cover. I think it was one of the first cookbooks to have a purely typographical cover and not have an image of food.
So you weren't selling yourself. You're not probably... Are you not anti-celebrity chef, or you just think the food speaks for itself?
Well, it doesn't interest me terribly. What interests us all here is making. You know, I like watching other chefs perform on television. I enjoy being on television explaining. I think it's great that there are people watching programs about cooking. I think it makes everybody more aware, maybe, but it's just slightly the word celebrity. I don't think people, myself included, start out thinking, I want to be a celebrity chef when I grow up. You know, you want to be a chef.
But that's what I really want to ask you. Imagine, right, you're a young girl in America. You had no idea. I mean, did you have any idea your life path would be this? You'd marry an architect, you'd end up in England, I mean, what did you dream of as a child?
I don't know that I had childhood dreams of being something. I think every phase of my life, whether it was going to school, being a teenager, going to university, coming to London, becoming kind of very involved in political activity because of the Vietnam War, you know, going to art school, working at Penguin Books, you know, moving to Paris. All those are just phases in your life that you go through. Having my children, they're all steps, aren't they? They're not. I didn't dream of anything, and I dreamt to be a woman who could be strong and independent, but I didn't dream in any other ways.
Listen to us online, on your phone, download a podcast, or on your tablet. Radio Gorgeous, there for you.
Now, I want to ask, obviously, about Rose, who very sadly is not with us anymore. How did were you best friends? You know, tell me about your relationship.
Rose and I were very good friends. We weren't best friends. We weren't very, very close friends before we started the River Cafe. And then we became inseparable. You know, we bought the same clothes. We, you know, we stayed in hotels and we traveled around. We, you know, dealt with the problems here together. It was an incredibly close, strong relationship. And, you know, cooking-wise, we would cook mostly together when we did the books, but very often she would do the day shift, I would do the night, I would do the day, she would do the night, that kind of thing, you know, because... but we would always overlap, and, you know, as I said, the books were very bonded.
Did you plan the menus together then?
No. The early days, yeah, when we were working together. Sorry.
Don't worry.
Oh, I'm so tired. But then, you know, I would come in and do my menu, she would come in and do hers. But we'd always discuss it. I'd say, oh, you did this last night. Or I'd say, Rose, come over here and help me.
So does it change every day?
Every meal.
What?
Yeah.
Do you have a different menu tonight?
So I don't know what they're cooking tonight. So the chef will come in. Bye, Jen. The chef will come in tonight and do her menu. Well, it goes back, even though we've grown, it always starts from the idea we had is that you treat the kitchen in a restaurant a bit like you do at home, that you don't go to the market with a recipe in your head. You go, you see what's there, and then you come home and cook. So I do the same thing this morning. I came in and I looked in the fridge and saw what fish was left from yesterday and what new ones they've ordered today. I saw what vegetables had come in, what vegetables didn't come in. And then, you know, there's a lot of repetition, you know, because we do mozzarella, we do prosciutto.
And also it evolves into another dish, everything. Yeah. Yeah.
But we keep our menu. We have usually 7 starters. We do 4 pastas and we do... 3 fish, 3 meats. So
that kind of focuses you on.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Can you just tell me about traveling through Italy? Because I know you did. Was it a TV program or a cookbook?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Well, we, you know, the crucial thing for me and for Rose and the chefs is to keep going back to Italy for our inspiration, our knowledge, our interest. Because you always learn, and Italy is an incredibly regional country in terms of the food, and it's not even regional, it's city to city, town to town, village to village, family to family, about the pride they take in the way they cook something. So if you go to Piemonte, you will find ingredients that you don't find in Venice, which is, you know, hundreds of miles away. If you go to, I spent a summer in Tuscany where I was very proudly told the local butcher that I was going to do something in the way they cooked it in Montepulciano, and he said, no, that's how they cook it in Siena, which was 50 miles away. So, you know, people are very, very... So for me, and for Rose, and for the young chefs here, going to Italy, whether it's Puglia or Sicily or Sardinia, Tuscany, La Marche... You know, it's a very
how wonderful. You go and eat.
Yeah, I always say it's work, but somebody has to do it. Yeah.
So, Ruthie, you're here today doing another service. You're still at it. Why are you still at it?
There's no place I would rather be than the River Cafe. You know, this is where I feel so lucky to work with the people I work with, to do the job that I do in terms of, you know, cooking and. I feel so privileged that, you know, we've got great customers and people enjoy it. And my husband's office is next door, so
yeah,
he comes
saw
in.
Him.
So
yeah.
And so what else would I do? You know, obviously some days when I'm cooking at night, I don't come until 3, so I have my hair done or I see a friend for a coffee. But, you know, basically I just can't wait to get to work.
That is the best advert for cooking. And, oh, yeah, lastly, do you still see yourself as a cook or a chef?
Rose and I like to call ourselves cooks. We can call people ask me what I do. I say I'm a chef. You know, it's a fine line. You know.
Thank you so Thank much you. For coming on to Radio
okay.
Gorgeous. You're
Thank
so
you.
Lovely.
Thank you.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us. Contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com. And to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
Porte cazzuna con uno stemma a rete, una cuppulella che vi si era aizzata, passa scampagnando per tu l'ete, con mano a papà te fa guardare. Tu fa l'americano, americano, americano, sienta a me chi tu fa fa.
vuoi vivere alla moda, ma se bevi whisky e soda, poi ti senti disturbato. Tu abballo rock e roll, tu gioca pesa bolla, bei sorte beccamella, chi te li dà la borsetta di mamma tua fa l'americano, americano, americano. Ma si nati in Italia, siente a me non c'è sta niente fa, ok napolitan, tu vuoi fare l'American, tu vuoi fare l'American. Come ta può capire chi ta va bene, se tu la parla miezza americano, quando si fa l'amore sotto la luna, come da bene in capo di I love you. Tu vuoi fare l'americano, americano, americano, senta a me chi tu fa fan. Tu vuoi vivere alla moda, ma se bevi whisky e soda, o ti senti disturbato. Tu abballo rock e roll, tu gioca a baseball, me sorte beccamel, te li dà la borsetta di mamma tua fa l'americano, americano, americano. Ma si nati in Italia, sienta a me non c'è sta niente fa, ok napolitan, tu fa l'americano, tu fa l'americano. Americano, americano, americano. Ma si nati in Italia, sienta a me non c'è sta niente fa, ok napolitan, tu fa l'American, tu fa l'American. Whisky, soda, rock and roll.